From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! Pacifica Radio takes over local programming at its oldest radio station, KPFA. More than 40 people are arrested. We'll have a roundtable about Pacifica Radio. And we'll speak with a reporter from Northern Ireland. He interviewed a paramilitary leader connected to the British police, and the British courts are ordering him to hand over his records. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Indonesian police blocked an attempt by anti-independence militiamen to break into a UN office in East Timor, this according to a UN spokesperson. The attack came just days after Indonesia's military commander and senior cabinet ministers promised to step up protection for officials of the United Nations, which is organizing a referendum on independence for East Timor. The United Nations had repeatedly complained that Indonesian forces had done little to maintain law and order ahead of the ballot, which is scheduled for August 21st or August 22nd. Meanwhile, a senior U.S. diplomat held talks yesterday in Jakarta with Indonesian officials and a pro-independence leader. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Stanley Roth met separately with Indonesian Foreign Minister Ali Alatas and jailed East Timorese independence leader Xanana Gusmao as part of an international effort to ensure that the referendum go on as scheduled. Vietnam has scolded the United States for trying to impose its human rights values on other countries and urge Washington to cooperate on unresolved wartime issues. The foreign ministry, in a statement following bilateral talks earlier this week on human rights and religion, also indicated Vietnam would ignore a U.S. request that certain prisoners be freed. Vietnamese officials held talks on Monday and Tuesday in Hanoi with Bennett Freeman, U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary in the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights and Labor. The Vietnamese Foreign Ministry says Washington should cooperate in dealing with problems associated with the chemical defoliant Agent Orange, which was sprayed over parts of Vietnam to stop infiltration by forces using jungle cover during operations. In Bangkok, Thailand, more than 100 Thai environmentalists gathered at the U.S. Embassy yesterday to demand that the United States take responsibility for cleaning up some toxic Vietnam War chemical defoliants recently discovered at a provincial airport. Drums of buried chemicals were found by workers expanding a runway at the airport near the seaside resort of Hua Hin. The workers fell ill. Fears arose the chemical might be Agent Orange, dumped by the U.S. military units who were stationed there in the 60s and 70s. Tests by U.S. and Thai agencies confirmed that the chemical was old, degraded Agent Orange, the defoliant sprayed from U.S. warplanes. A UN-ordered conference on whether Jewish settlements in the West Bank violate the Geneva Conventions will proceed, even if somewhat curtailed. This, according to Palestinian officials. Israel and the United States have urged the cancellation of the conference scheduled for Thursday, the result of a 115-2 vote by the UN General Assembly in February. The conference might be short, but will absolutely not be a symbolic exercise, said Nasser al-Kidwa, the Palestinian UN observer and delegation member. At issue is land Israel captured from Jordan during the 1967 Mideast War, the West Bank, and East Jerusalem. Acknowledging the worsening trade tensions with Europe over genetically engineered foods, the Clinton administration said yesterday for the first time it would conduct long-term studies on the safety of altered farm products. But in a speech, the Secretary of Agriculture, Dan Glickman, insisted the administration would use all its legal remedies to compel Europe to accept American farm products like soybeans and corn, even if that means placing tariffs on European-made goods this summer. Glickman also said the administration is considering asking the food industry to do voluntary information labeling, which is opposed by the biotech industry, but demanded by the Europeans and some American consumers.
There is no silence deep enough.
There is no silence deep enough.
No corruption thick enough. No politician bent enough to bury your story, to keep it from us. Love from a short distance.
Listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman, joined by my co-host Juan Gonzalez. Welcome, Juan.
Good day, Amy, and to our listeners around the country.
Well, today we're going to take on some Pacifica news that is making headlines, and that is yesterday, Pacifica Radio talk show host who works at KPFA, the Pacifica station in Berkeley, California, was thrown off the air and later arrested amid protests over the management of the nation's oldest public radio station. Dennis Bernstein is host of KPFA's public affairs news program, Flashpoints. He was placed on administrative leave last night for reporting about conflict with our parent organization, the Pacifica Foundation. Dennis was one of at least 40 protesters arrested last night for trespassing after they refused to leave the 50-year-old station. Seven other employees are also arrested, this according to Associated Press. We don't have the final figure on those arrests. The Berkeley-based Pacifica Foundation took over programming and replaced it with tape shows. Now, before we go to our guests, and we're going to have a roundtable discussion, we will be speaking with community members, a member of the local advisory board of KPFA. We'll be speaking with one of the news directors at KPFA in Berkeley, as well as Dennis Bernstein, who was the first one taken off the air yesterday. We are going to hear what the KPFA news sounded like last night. It was about 6:10 Pacific Standard Time when their news goes on. Mark Miracle was doing the cast, the news director at KPFA, and he was running a Pacifica national piece. I believe it was on health care. You're going to hear excerpts, tiny excerpts of that piece, but it was continually turned off. We'll find out why later, and then you'll hear the room sound of what happened.
Range of American society. It's the majority of the uninsured are white, minority.
I'm nervous. I'm afraid you're going to hurt me. You're going to shoot me.
African Americans.
I have belongings here. Excuse me. You cannot.
Ma'am, we interrupt the story from Mark Beavis on HMO because Dennis Bernstein of France Flashpoints has been put on administrative leave for his playing of a press conference concerning the crisis here at KPFA on Flashpoints just within the last half an hour. The KPFA, the guards that Pacifica has placed in KPFA are trying to drag him out of the studio.
The conference. And here you are, ready to.
And you can hear that in the background.
Here. What is Pacifica coming to?
Garland Ganter, who is the general manager of the Pacifica station in Houston, was brought in by Pacific Executive Director.
And that was the end of the local newscast at KPFA in Berkeley, at which point the plug was pulled and it went to tape programming that has been running since then from the Pacifica archives. Well, Juan, this is the scene at this point.
Yes, and I would say that, generally speaking, news organizations are reluctant to discuss issues that affect the internal workings of the organization. But when it becomes something as public as this situation has been with these arrests and the continuing battle, it would be on our part derelict if we did not at least attempt to get to some of the underlying issues and what is this all about and how does it affect public broadcasting, community broadcasting, and issues of free speech and progressive politics in the United States.
We're going to start off with Dennis Bernstein and Mark Miracle. Dennis Bernstein, again, the host of Flashpoint Show, which had gone on just before the news, who you heard shouting in the background, and Mark Miracle, who is doing the news last night and is news director at KPFA. We welcome you both to Democracy Now!
Thank you, Amy.
Why don't we start with Dennis? Can you tell us what first happened before the news went on yesterday?
Well, what happened was I did my show as I do every day and always report on what we think are very important issues to the community. We spent 40 minutes yesterday, for instance, discussing the Unity 99 conference that you all attended. Had a little round table on that. At the end of that, we played a clip of a press conference that was held in front of a municipal court and covered by many journalists. In fact, when you listen to the 13 or 14 minute clip, you can hear the various reporters asking questions of the participants. We thought it was news, not only because those who were arrested protesting Pacifica policies were being arraigned and wanted to talk about why they had been arrested, but also there was an announcement about legal action against Pacifica. And there was an announcement at that press conference about new commentaries, several dozen commentaries by such luminaries as Alice Walker, Joan Baez, Mumia Abu-Jamal, Howard Zinn, Noam Chomsky, Adrian Rich, and others, in support of the staff at KPFA. So I thought that 14 minutes of that press conference with one or two of those commentaries to give a sense of what people were talking about was a fair analysis, and a fair coverage. So I put that on the air. And you need to understand that at a 2 o'clock staff meeting earlier in that day, earlier yesterday, we were called in with 15 minutes notice, and we were introduced to somebody whose name I wasn't even sure of. Now I understand it's Garland Ganter. We were not told exactly what position he was taking. He wasn't going to be the acting manager because he was already a manager. He told us he was there because he respected KPFA, but if we violated the gag rule, he'd have to pull us off. I asked him in that press conference if we cover what the mainstream is covering. If it's in the mainstream, are we allowed to cover it? He said, and I'm quoting, "You can report on it as long as it's been reported in the mainstream." I now understand, as I see an Associated Press report, that Alain Fabre, the Pacifica National spokesperson, is saying the reason, I guess she's saying the reason I was fired is because
you're put on administrative leave.
Whatever you want to call it, the reason that was done to me, I know in Nicole Sawaya wasn't fired, she was terminated, but the reason that was done to me is because I was at that press conference, and it was me making a statement about some kind of labor management dispute. Well, my best witnesses that I wasn't there was Lynn Chadwick and Garland Ganter and the 15 or 20 staff members who were with me at 2 o'clock. That press conference was covered by Leslie Kane with many other reporters.
Who was my co-host on Flashpoints.
I wasn't there. She wrote the lead. She read the lead. She cut the piece, and she put it on.
And so, Dennis, you ran that piece, and then your program ended at 6 o'clock in the evening yesterday. And what happened?
What happened was I came out of the studio, and after having worked 8 years there and doing a daily show in the previous 5 years at WBAI, doing a daily morning show with your morning host, Robert Knight, I was met by Garland Ganter at the stairs. He said, get your keys and evacuate the premises. This is after raising millions of dollars, $75,000 in the last fundraiser. I was told that I was not even allowed to get my personal belongings because I had violated the gag rule by playing this public press conference. It's very important for me to say that Pacifica spokespeople saying I was somewhere that I wasn't as a justification for firing me is a very serious mistake. I'm not saying she was lying. Obviously, Alain Febre was extremely misinformed to say I was at the press conference talking when I was with Lynn Chadwick and Garland Ganter being read the Riot Act about what we could and could not do.
Dennis, I'd like to ask Mark to take it from here. Mark Miracle, the news director, since at that point you went into, was it you went into the news? It's, we have only two segments now, and we have a lot of people we want to get in to get in different aspects of the story that have been unfolding over the last 2 months. Next up, we'll be speaking with Andrea Bufo and Jay Amani. Andrea Bufo with the head of the Comedia Alliance in the Bay Area, and Jay Amani, a member of the local advisory board, and then Lynn Chadwick will be joining us. But Mark Miracle, can you take it from there, since you then started the news at 6 o'clock?
I started the news at 6 o'clock, Amy, and as I introduced our first story, which is a tape segment from Mark Beavis on the debate in the Senate on the patient's Bill of Rights vis-a-vis HMO organizations, as I read my introduction to that tape segment, I looked up and I saw that Dennis had been pursued into the our news control room by armed guards that had been installed. Armed guards. That's important for people to know. Armed guards by an organization that had been founded by pacifists 50 years ago had been pursued into our news control room by these armed guards, and the manager of KPFT in Houston, Garland Ganter, who had been brought in by Lynn Chadwick to enforce the so-called gag rule, which prohibits discussion of internal matters on Pacifica, by any broadcaster. And
Mark, if I can interrupt you for 1 second.
Sure,
because
sure,
you seem to be really and obviously distressed over this whole issue of armed guards being at KPFA. But looking at it from the point of view of the management of Pacifica, haven't there been, in the process of the ongoing disputes there, some violent incidents, including somebody shooting into KPFA, that might, in their view, justify the need to have some kind of protection at the station? Although nobody likes it, we have to deal with the reality of how some of these conflicts have erupted over the last several months.
One, our general manager was fired on March 31st, Nicole Sawaya, who had the unanimous support in writing given to the Board of Pacifica in a February board meeting, in writing, public letter. On the night that she was fired, on March 31st of this year, someone fired a number of bullets into an unoccupied office of Pacifica Foundation for unknown reasons, maybe related, maybe not related to her dismissal earlier in the day, unoccupied building. The Berkeley Police Department has been investigating that shooting as a firing into a occupied building, not as an attempted homicide, not as anything else.
But I'm sure you'd agree that bullets being fired into
nothing
is something to be concerned about.
Yes. Our side denounced that. The other side denounced that. Everyone has denounced that. No other act of overt violence has happened since that.
Mark, we...
No other violence has happened since that.
Mark, we have to break for stations to identify themselves. When we come back, we'll finish up with Mark Miracle and Dennis Bernstein for a few minutes and hear what happened with Mark on the newscast and why ultimately the plug was pulled. I have to say we're trying to reach Garland Ganter, who was there for that encounter, the general manager of KPFT, who is now at KPFA in Berkeley, but we have not been able to reach him. After that, we're going to go to a community member and a community board member of the local KPFA station, and then we'll be speaking with Lynn Chadwick. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez as we continue to talk about Pacifica. As we reported earlier on the news, as Mark Miracle was doing the news, Dennis Bernstein went into the newsroom pursued by security guards, and that interrupted the news programming, and we just heard a clip of that. And at that point, the plug was pulled as Mark Miracle was explaining what was happening, and it went to tape programming from the Pacifica archives, and the KPFA Pacifica station has since been running those archival tapes. We just have a minute to go with Mark Miracle, news director of KPFA, and Dennis Bernstein, who is the host and producer of the daily news public affairs magazine Flashpoints. Can you sum up for us each, from your perspective, what you think the larger issue is today that you are dealing with at KPFA?
Right.
Let's begin with Mark.
The issue is this, that the executive director, Lynn Chadwick, chair of the board, Mary Frances Berry, are totally out of touch with the balance that needs to be between running a network and including the voices and views of the local stations in the Pacifica Network, including KPFA, totally out of touch with the culture and experience and politics of Northern and Central California. And they are totally out of touch with that. They are arrogant, they're abusive, and don't know what's going on, and they are wrecking the strongest station in the network. They are wrecking the station which was the first listener-sponsored station in the world, and they are endangering the existence of the Pacifica Network by their actions. They've taken us off the air.
Mark,
they fired our staff. Yeah,
one. Just quickly from Dennis, because we do have to get to other people. If you could do it very quickly, Dennis, what your and I know it's difficult to do it in these trying situations, but what you think is the substance of the problem, if it's any different from what Mark has said.
We should also point out, by the way, that Dennis Bernstein and Mark Miracle have just hours ago returned from jail because they were among the, we don't know the exact figures now, but at least 40 people who were arrested overnight as a result of what's happening at KPFA. Dennis?
we were arrested by Pacifica again because the police refused to do it. I want to take my last 60 seconds to answer your question about isn't it natural to hire some armed guards? These are not armed guards. These are not Walmart guards. These are private investigators, a international firm that specializes in hostile terminations and takeover. What happened here, and I have to say this, was not, this is private, these are people who are acting like private managers of a private corporation that has no relationship to the public. They came in, they've got, why did they wait? If they're protecting us and themselves, why did they wait 2 months to bring in these armed guards? Why did they station them at the transmitter at the station? Why are they mostly in with us if the shots went in through next door? Where is the money coming from 6 to 8 investigators with intelligence experience in the federal government around the clock, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 a day? Where is this money coming from? This is what makes it a public story. Are they using listener money? Is this private money coming in for something else to happen? We couldn't even afford to send a reporter from KPFA overseas, and we can't even afford an engineer 1 hour a day, and now we're spending $10,000, $15,000 a day on a private hostile takeover firm that specializes, if you go to their website, in hostile terminations. Who is the new human resource director in here to evaluate and update files? He's the guy that hired this private police force. Why are they all armed? What is the relationship between what happened in those shots and what's really going on?
Dennis,
there are some serious questions. Follow the money trail. Where is this $10,000 a day coming from, and is this listener money?
Dennis Bernstein and Mark Miracle, they are two longtime programmers at KPFA, Pacifica's first station, which this year is in its 50th year. Dennis Bernstein and Mark Miracle. We now turn to Andrea Bufa and Jay Amani. Andrea Bufa is head of the Media Alliance, which is a media activist group in the Bay Area. She was a part of a group that went to the Pacifica National Board meeting in Washington, sent by the larger community in the Bay Area. As Jay Amani also was there and is a local advisory board member and also is a community organizer for the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. Andrea Bufa, yesterday you read an email that you had been sent. You read this at a public news conference before your arraignment, along with more than a dozen protesters who'd been arrested in an earlier civil disobedience at Pacifica Radio. Can you talk about what that was about?
Sure. On Monday, this Monday, I received an email at Media Alliance, my workplace, which seemed to come from Michael Palmer, who is on the National Board of Directors of Pacifica Radio. And this email was seemed to be directed to Dr. Mary Frances Berry, the chair of the board of Pacifica, but for some reason it was sent to me. And what it discusses are things that are just unimaginable. It discusses the shutting down of KPFA and reprogramming immediately. It discusses putting up other stations in Pacifica Network up for sale. If I could just read from some of this email. This email says, when he's referring to the Bay Area, I was under the impression there was support in the proper quarters and a definite majority for shutting down that unit and reprogramming immediately, which, you know, one day later is what you've seen has happened at KPFA. He discusses the sale of stations, including WBAI in New York, to the highest buyer, including private buyers. And I think what's so important about this is, you know, people in Pacifica have been talking about what's going on here, why is this so important. And based on this email, this is about a corporate takeover of the only national progressive radio network in the United States.
Jay Amani, you have been working on this issue this year, becoming a member of the local community board. What is your involvement? And maybe you can explain for the listeners the relation of the local community board at KPFA to the national board.
Yeah, well, up until recently, the local advisory board member elected people to the national board to represent sort of local community interests, because this is, after all, a community radio. And through the last several months, culminating finally yesterday with taking over the station, Mary Dr. Barry and Lynn Chadwick have been cutting out the community in this process, surgically, just going through and disconnecting themselves from the community and sort of not only community support, but a community accountability. Like I met with Dr. Barry 2 days ago, briefly, forced my way into her private press conference that she had called in Oakland after community people had been begging her, myself, Andrea Buffett, seven other folks from the Bay Area, to come to the Bay Area and meet with the community, come to the Bay Area and meet with the staff of KPFA, come to the Bay Area and meet with the stakeholders, folks who've been major donors to KPFA for, you know, some of them 30 years. And she came and held a private press conference on the 21st floor of the Marriott Hotel in Oakland, where community folks and even some members of the media were excluded until she realized how big of a story that would be and decided to let us all in, and met with some of us briefly afterwards, where we, you know, once again asked her to come and meet with some of the representatives from KPFA to come to some sort of settlement in this crisis.
Jay, if I'd like to ask you, one of the things that I've heard raised numerous times over the last several months as this conflict has developed is the claim that in reality that those who are involved in these protests do not represent the community at large, and that it actually that there is it's even been couched in racial terms, that there is a conflict between a small group of older white radicals who keep resisting African Americans or others who are in leadership at the national level in Pacifica. Would you respond to that? And to what degree is there not just community involvement, broad community involvement, but multiracial involvement in this ongoing battle between the community board there and the Pacifica Foundation?
This is a fight about local input and local control and local autonomy versus nationalizing local radio stations and community radio. This is what this is about. This is not about race. This is not about ethnicity. This is not about class or gender. This is about who gets to hold the ball. Who is the community and community radio? How would Mary Frances Berry know? How would Lynn Chadwick know who the community are in the Bay Area when they spend no time meeting with and talking with the community? It's really interesting and almost a little disappointing that people point fingers and come up with all this sort of interesting rhetoric about people they've never met with, about people they don't even know. Like if Mary Lynn had sat down with people and talked to them about what was going on, then I could see them coming up with that and saying that and having that analysis. But having never met with the community, having never met with the community folks out here, how would they even know who they represent? How would they know? How do they know who the community is out here when they don't spend any time out here? When Mary's throwing thunderbolts from on high from D.C. telling people how things are going to change in the Bay Area without actually coming down and sitting here and talking with us about how things need to change. So, you know, the young people of color we brought to D.C. to meet with her and to speak with her, who she wouldn't speak to or meet with for 2 days, those people were racist and those people are just old folks who are trying to keep things the way they are. I seriously doubt that. In fact, I know that to be not true. So this is just a smokescreen, another part of their dishonesty and thuggish behavior. When yesterday the only violence so far that's been perpetrated has been perpetrated by Pacifica, where they've had, when I brought young people of color, myself a young person of color, to D.C. to meet with the board and staff of Pacifica, and they sick the D.C. police on us. This is not community radio. This is not about having young people of color involved. This is about certain people being able to control this network, certain people being able to be right and winning an argument about community radio where they cut the community out in order to win. That's unacceptable. That's wrong. I can't believe that this is being allowed to go on. Where at a free speech radio station, we have the police turning away protesters, pushing and shoving on protesters who are using their free speech, standing in front of the station and chanting. But this is their station. That they help raise the money. They should have a say. They should not be cut out. begging and pleading to sit down and talk with somebody rational about this, as opposed to what's been going on thus far, which is being locked out of the process, being told that they're who they don't represent without ever speaking to them.
Well, Jay Amani, I want to thank you for being with us from the local advisory board of KPFA. Jay, again, also works for the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. And also having joined us, Andrea Bufa, final 30-second comment, if you will. Andrea, head of the Media Alliance in the Bay Area.
Yeah. While Pacifica tries to distract attention from the main issue, I just want to make it clear that they've used repressive measures against KPFA, and they're prepared to do that against the entire Pacifica network, including a gag rule and censorship, armed guards, calls to the Department of Justice, massive arrests, and changes in the board governance of Pacifica that insulates this organization from community input, whether that input is in New York or in California. This is a major national issue and an issue for all of Pacifica Radio and anyone who cares about free speech. In an issue of so much media conglomeration, where most of the media outlets are owned by huge corporations, especially in radio, this is one of the only independent national media outlets that exists. And if this is destroyed, this is an incredible blow to free speech in the United States.
Well, I thank you both for joining us, Andrea Bufa and Jay Amani. And in the final segment of our coverage of the Pacifica crisis, we turn to the executive director of Pacifica, Lynn Chadwick, speaking to us also from Berkeley. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Lynn Chadwick. Well, Lynn, you have gotten to hear what the various members of the community, both staff members of KPFA and people in the community, have had to say. First, what is your response and explanation or description of what happened last night now that Pacifica has taken over the local programming of KPFA and is running tapes from the Pacifica archives?
Well, I think the first response I want to make has been the underlining discussion around violence at the station. And it's important for your listeners to understand the level of violence that has been going on there since the shots were fired at KPFA and at the national office. And if you know, I mean, the radio station is obviously a 24-hour facility. So shots were fired at KPFA when people were in that station. And it was also fired into our office when the cleaning crew had only shortly left, and our computer operator came into the station minutes after the police arrived on the scene, who was planning to come in and do some computer upgrades there. There's been further violence at the station. We have had another demonstration that went on that became very... My staff was scratched and hurt in the scuffle. We had people blocking the entrance to our office. It's the only entrance we had. We had to go through a struggle to get in the office and then a struggle to get out of the office. We have had people of credibility speak directly to the national board saying there was a threatened takeover of the station and that it was important, it was my responsibility to protect the people and property at Pacifica. So it was with great reluctance, and I agree at great expense, that we have had to put security personnel in the building to protect the people and the facility itself from a takeover. In terms of what went on at the station, I was not on the site last night. What I know is what you know to a large extent, what I saw on the TV news last night and what I have heard secondhand. It's important to know that this is not a takeover of the station. Pacifica owns... The Pacifica Foundation owns license to all the five stations. These are stations that are our responsibility in a legal sense through the FCC. And we are an organization closely tied to the community. I myself have worked in community radio, as you know, for nearly 25 years. And I understand the community involvement in community radio. I live in Berkeley. I've lived in California for many years of my life, and I am not an outsider to this community. I understand, the Bay Area talks about, and as Jay said, we are a unique community. Well, every community is. Every community where Pacifica has a station is a community that has its unique qualities. As you know, New York is very different from Berkeley, but both WBAI and KPFA are held by the Pacifica Foundation, which is a corporation, a nonprofit corporation, to be sure, but that is the structure in this country that we hold licenses. I want to emphasize on this news, as I've emphasized several times, that no station, no part of the Pacifica network is for sale. The email that you referred to, the first I heard of it was yesterday when I got a response or saw the press conference that was going to happen around it. That was an individual email from an individual board member who in the past has said, you know, this it may be a solution to some of our financial issues. We had disavowed that, and that is something that we are not planning to do in any way. Yes.
Lynn, we have to break for stations to identify themselves, but we'll be back with you, Lynn Chadwick, Executive Director of the Pacifica Foundation, as we continue to discuss the crisis at Pacifica. And then we hope to also talk about a situation of freedom of the press in Northern Ireland with a Northern Irish reporter who is here. His accounts are being seized. The British courts are demanding he hand over documents because he interviewed a paramilitary death squad leader in Northern Ireland. You're listening to Pacifica Radio. It's Democracy Now, and we'll be back in a minute. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez. Our guest is Pacifica Foundation Executive Director Lynn Chadwick, and she is talking about a memo that was by mistake, according to the sender. Is this right? Michael Palmer, who is a board member, a national board member of Pacifica, sent to Andrea Bufo, who we were just talking to, of the Media Alliance. It was supposed to go, at least in the memo that we also have a copy of, to Mary Frances Berry, the chair of our board, as well as the chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. And in that memo, Lynn, he says, as an update for you and Lynn, this was directed to Mary, I spoke with the only radio broker I know last week, and he talked about, you know, the value of the radio stations. And he went on to talk about how the radio stations could be sold quietly, perhaps the value of the radio station KPFA at $65-75 million range. But then went on to say his feelings that perhaps WBAI would be more significant to sell and a better asset to sell. Now, you know for sure that this was sent by Michael Palmer, the national board member. And again, what is your response? Because he seems to be responding to requests, at least the way it sounds, and you can correct us if this is not the case, requests by you and Mary Frances Berry to look into the value of the stations.
Amy, as I said a few minutes ago, Michael Palmer has said to before that he was interested in this situation, that this is not something that represents an interest of Dr. Berry's or mine or the board of the foundation. I think there's one more thing I need to address from the previous segment that is very important. It concerns the personalization of what's going on now as something being taken on independently by Dr. Berry and myself. And this, I regret the fact that this has been so personalized by individuals in the community to the point of, you know, mischaracterizing Dr. Berry and myself extremely. This is not anything that Dr. Berry and I are taking on independently. We are working in our capacities. She as the chair of the board and I as the executive director at the direction of the board, who is made up of representatives from the various stations around the country. It's true that we did have a bylaw change, but the current board makeup at this time includes representatives sitting on it who were formerly local advisory board members at each of the stations. It is not an issue of a secret plan by Dr. Barry and myself. This is something that the board is operating in Pacifica in a very democratic fashion. They voted on the bylaws change that was referred to by some of the previous speakers in a very democratic way. To overturn that, I think, is an anti-democratic act. And this is something that we are acting on behalf and in our roles as representatives of the Pacifica Foundation and in good faith, and should not be seen as anything personal.
Well, Lynn Chadwick, you can understand why, in terms of the broader issue that the folks on the other side are raising as to whether in this era of increasing concentration of commercial radio and television outlets, that there may be some issue here in terms of whether Pacifica is taking a new direction. Is there anything in substance in the new policies of Pacifica that are different from how the network has operated in the past? And if you could, as we've asked the other people, to give us a sense of what do you think is the underlying issue that is going on here that has caused so much commotion in the Bay Area and throughout the Pacific network?
There has been a commotion going on since the evening that I advised Nicole Sawyer that her contract was not renewed. I think it's also important to know that Dennis Benstein has not been fired. He's on administrative leave, and there's a very specific reason for that, and that's he is on administrative leave, on paid administrative leave. Pacifica has always been an unusual organization in that we have one organization, the Pacifica Foundation, that holds the licenses to these stations in five different communities. This is not a corporatization or a centralization. That's the foundation structure that was created some 50 years ago. We are trying to create more national programs such as this one that is funded by Pacifica and is carried on the five stations. That's one reason this conversation is so awkward, is that here I am talking with my employees as if it's about an unrelated news story, and of course we're all involved in it here very closely. The new direction, as for the chance that it's a new direction for Pacifica, what we are trying to do is make that network real. That's not what the issue is about here. There are underlying issues. We've had several demands that have come from the staff around the rehiring of the former manager and to come to the table to discuss the underlying issues. Pacifica management, we have stood ready to come to the table and have tried over the months this has been going on. Actually, I talked to the union suggested at a meeting back in early June that we do come to a mediation. They recommended the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service. We as management accepted that. They suggested a commissioner from the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service. We have accepted that. As a late-breaking news story, I should tell you that I talked to the mediator late last night, and we are trying to actually pull together some kind of mediation even later today.
And this
but we have been waiting for this to happen, and
Lynn,
I think it's important.
Lynn, this is a mediation that will include the larger community because it's now...
That was always part of the discussion. What we have been trying to explore is how to do that in an appropriate way, and that's going to be an interesting conversation, but we are not trying to shut out the community from this conversation.
I also understand the mayor of Berkeley has gotten involved and the Berkeley City Council calling for a resolution.
There has been that involvement. I had a meeting with the mayor last night, and she is going to make a call for peace and is urging us to go forward. And I said to her last night, and I'll say to you now, as I just said, we stand ready for mediation. We have stood ready for mediation for several weeks.
We are
waiting to do that.
In order to go to the next segment, I do want to then ask, what about the resolution of the crisis now at KPFA? You have tapes running from the Pacifica Archives, local programs
We are hoping for the situation to cool down so we can resume normal programming at KPFA as soon as possible.
Well, Lynn Chadwick, Executive Director of the Pacifica Foundation, we also tried to get in touch with Mary Frances Berry, but were not successful, and sorry, we were not able to talk to Garland Ganter, who is at KPFA right now. We had hoped to speak with him as well. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! As we move to another issue of the press in these last few minutes of the program, we're going to turn to an international issue as negotiators from the different factions of Northern Ireland's conflict attempt to put together a peace accord. Today, we're going to look at the story that illustrates Britain's repressive rule of Northern Ireland, a story involving murder and cover-up by British authorities. Civil rights groups in Ireland have expressed grave concerns over the serving of a court order on the Belfast U.S. correspondent of an Irish newspaper who interviewed a police informant now charged with murdering a Catholic lawyer. The court is demanding records kept by Ed Maloney of the Sunday Tribune regarding an interview he conducted with the informant about the murder of Pat Finucane, a lawyer who exposed cases of police brutality against Catholics in Northern Ireland and was killed almost a decade ago. We are joined by Ed Maloney, who is the reporter, as well as a guest from the Committee to Lawyers Committee of Human Rights, Tessa Robinson. Ed Maloney, can you tell us your story and who William Stobey is, the man you first interviewed almost 10 years ago?
Well, very briefly, this is a story which could have come out of Central America back in the 1980s. It involves the murder of a prominent criminal lawyer in Belfast who specialized in cases dealing with Republican terrorist and paramilitary organizations. He was murdered at his home in 1989 by a Protestant loyalist organization. Since then, evidence has been seeping out suggesting that there was official foreknowledge on the part of the police and the army in Northern Ireland of the murder. One in the case of the intelligence officer in the loyalist group was working for a British Army unit that has now been established. We know also that he fully briefed his handlers in the British Army before the killing. And subsequently, it has emerged that the man who provided the guns to the loyalists to shoot Pat Finucane was also working as an agent for the state in the form of the police force. His name was William Stobey. I originally interviewed him back in 1989, within 6 or 7 months of the murder of Pat Finucane. He spoke to me because he was worried about his own safety. He had been acting as an agent for the police for a couple of years after being implicated in the murder. And he feared for his life if it became known that what he had done. So he gave me the story on the condition that I would not use it without his permission. And then 3 or 4 weeks ago, he was arrested and charged with the murder of Pat Finucane, despite the fact that he had warned the authorities that it was going to happen. And as a result of that, we published a story in the Sunday Tribune, which showed quite clearly that there had been considerable foreknowledge and covering up of the murder of Pat Finucane. And since then, I've been served with, as you said there, served with a court order requiring me by tomorrow to surrender all the documents and notes associated with William Stobey. That, of course, I refuse to do. My lawyers are at the moment trying to fight this in Belfast. If they fail, there is a possibility that I could go to jail for between 6 months and 5 years. So it's quite a serious issue, both from a personal point of view, but also from the point of view of press freedom.
And how do the courts in Britain deal with issues such as reporters protecting sources or reporters' notes that are not actually published? What's been the history in the past?
It's been a very dismal history indeed. Unfortunately, major media outlets, and I'm thinking of organizations like the British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC, have been served with writs exactly the same as I've been served with, and rather than fight them, they have surrendered and given up material. And that's eroded, I think, certain ethical principles of journalism, but it's also undermined the trust that has to exist between journalists and their sources.
Now, is it not only your source handing over your documents and any records you have of the interview, but also your own personal assets? Is your money being frozen?
I don't think they have the power to do that under the legislation that exists. They have the power to fine me and also to sentence me to a term of imprisonment. And depending on how they deal with that could be up to 5 years. But if I don't pay the fine, then they could take action against me.
Well, the allegations that are being made are extremely serious. The relationship between the paramilitary death squads and the Royal Ulster Constabulary, the British police. Tessa Robinson, you're with the Lawyers Committee for Human Rights. What are you calling for?
Yes, it was the Finucane case that first got the Lawyers Committee for Human Rights involved in monitoring the situation in Northern Ireland. We've been campaigning for the establishment of a full independent judicial inquiry into all the circumstances surrounding the murder on the basis of these compelling allegations and indeed evidence of collusion between the British security forces and paramilitaries in the killing of this prominent human rights lawyer.
And how does this case fit in or in within the continuing attempt to implement the peace accords in Northern Ireland?
Well, there's a police commission at work at the moment. It was set up under the Good Friday Agreement, and we believe that it's chaired at the moment by Chris Patton. We believe that they should address the Finucane case as part of the broader issue of police accountability, which is one of the elements of police that they will be reviewing.
Incidentally, I think the one of the reasons why William Stobie has been arrested and charged is that it makes the whole matter sub judice and therefore makes it impossible to set up the sort of inquiry which Tessa and her group here in New York are looking for. There are those of us who are, you know, deeply suspicious of the motives of the government in arresting and charging Stobie.
How often do you have the press investigating these connections like you are doing, Ed Maloney?
All too infrequently, I'm afraid. It's not a career-enhancing pursuit in Northern Ireland, and never has been. And unfortunately, there are just too few journalists who are prepared to take the risks. And there are great risks. Not only do you risk the sort of action that's been taken against me, but you get a name for causing trouble. And in a small place like Northern Ireland, you know, that's not a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And what about you and your own safety?
Well, I'm absolutely secure, I think, because I've gone public and gone as public as I possibly can. And I think once you're out in the open, you're safe. It's only when you hide in secret little dark corners that people can do things to you and they can get away with them. So the more publicity, and this is why I'm seeking assistance over here in New York, the more publicity you can get, the better.
And is your intention to return soon to face...
Absolutely. I'm actually here on vacation. My wife is from New York, and we come over here for our annual holiday, and they served this court order on me 2 days before we were due to leave, so I left anyway, and I will return in 3 or 4 weeks' time, and so be it.
If people want to get in touch with you, if people want to learn more about the case, get more information on the investigation that you're doing between the security forces and the death squads, where can they call?
Well, they can email me at emo1, that's number one, at cable, cableol, cableol.co, that's co.uk.
That's emol at...
No, emo1, number one.
emo1 at cableol, dot...
Co.
Co.
Dot UK.
Dot UK. And if people want to read your articles that you've been doing.
Yes, it's on a website called NewsHound, which is N-U-Z Hound. NewsHound.
NewsHound.com.
Com.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us. I wish we had more time. Ed Maloney, Belfast correspondent for the Sunday Tribune, and Tessa Robinson with the Lawyers Committee for Human Rights. And that does it for today's program. If you'd like to order a cassette copy, you can call 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. Democracy Now! Is produced by Maria Carrion and David Love. Our technical director is Errol Maitland. If you'd like to email us, you can email us at democracy@pacifica.org. That's democracy@pacifica.org. And we'd like to hear your comments. Our comment line is 212-209-2999. That's 212-209-2999. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!
Love from a short distance.